Finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
This is Dr. Bev, and talking about Emotions Are Us, do I have a show for you today. So much that goes on and that goes wrong in the lives of individuals, families, schools, and society is caused by people generating more emotion than is necessary or helpful in response to their life events and what they do because of it or how to deal with it. That is why emotional management is the most important life skill. I want to introduce to you my guest, Ray Mathis. He's an educator. He's a consultant. He's a speaker. He's an author. He's an advocate for mental and emotional toolkit. And he's also a tool time group leader. His book, It's Just an Event. It's your choice how you want to feel. The ABC system of cognitive, emotional, and behavioral self-management and self-improvement. Ray, welcome to Emotions Are Us. I am so happy to have you here today.
I'm very happy to be here, and I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to people and share what I have to share.
Tell me, what's the story behind this book? It's just an event. It's your choice on how you want to feel.
Well, I was a teacher, and about halfway through my career, I was really having a lot more emotion than I really needed to have. And I wasn't going too well. I was starting to have health problems and everything else. And I had an unusually bad day where some kids worked me over pretty good in class. So I went to a counselor friend, and I decided to rant at him about these kids. And he sat and listened to me for quite a while and was very patient. After a while, he just kind of looked and said, "Look, Ray, it's your choice how you want to feel." And needless to say, I didn't take that very well because it felt like he was saying it was my fault. I was feeling the way I was, that I shouldn't be feeling the way I was, and that there's something wrong with me for feeling that way. And somehow I was making a big deal out of nothing, and that somehow it was okay those kids did that. But what he was really trying to teach me or tell me is that I didn't need to be a victim of what they said. I didn't need to be at their mercy of what they said or did every day in class. I could choose how I wanted to feel. And he went on to explain about Dr. Albert Ellis and his ABC theory of emotions, which I'd never heard of. And I was a psychology major in undergraduate school. And I'm sitting there thinking, why didn't anybody tell me this? I'm almost 40 years old. You know, no one's ever told me this, even in psychology classes. And so he told me there were a bunch of what they call REBT classes, rational emotive behavioral therapy, in the Chicago area for teachers. And there was an REBT therapist who taught these classes for teachers. So I took every one of them, 30 graduate hours worth, and I became certified in REBE, which is the educational version of REBT. And now I represent the Chicago, since retiring from the classroom, I started to represent the Chicago Institute for REBT. And I speak to teachers and students, and I speak at state and national conventions for teachers, counselors, and mental health professionals. And like you said earlier, I advocate for teaching all our teachers and students what I call the mental and emotional toolkit for life. And everything we're going to talk about today can be found at a website. I have a free website called itsjustanevent.com. Itsjustanevent.com, itsjustanevent.com.
We'll make sure that we put that up on the show page.
Okay, that's good. What we're going to talk about today is really something called locus of control. And locus of control is a term for where you see your feelings coming from, what you see as the cause of it. And you can have an internal, or what they sometimes call an inner locus of control, or you can have an external or outer locus of control. And most people have an external locus of control. That means they wrongly see what others say and do and what happens as the cause of how they feel. And it's perfectly understandable to have that because we all grow up around people who also have external locus of control. And, you know, they talk and act and in a way that teaches us to be the same. And the other reason it's understandable is because our feelings tend to come so quickly after things happen And it's hard to imagine that there was any intervening variable. It's got it. Our events have to cause what's happening to us and how we're feeling because they happen so quickly together. So the problem with looking at things that way, though, is that it puts you at the mercy of other people, and that it does that needlessly and puts you at the mercy of your life events, things that happen. And because of that, you're more likely to end up feeling worse than you need to or longer than necessary. And more importantly, if I look at things that way and think other people make me feel bad, I miss all kinds of opportunities to feel better.
Isn't that the truth?
That makes sense.
Of course it makes sense. How many people go through life feeling as if they're the victim? Life owes them something. It's not my fault. It's always someone else's fault. And you are so correct. These events that happen in our lives, we have thoughts about them, and it does equal a feeling, but we get to choose how we want to feel about that.
Yeah, and I'll try to explain how. I have a formula I teach people. Formula is event plus thoughts equals feelings, and then I usually draw a little arrow pointing to the right, and behavior. And I usually urge people to write that down. Basically, what it means is this. Anything someone else says or does or that happens is just an event in that formula. Events can be real or imagined. Now, and put it into words, there's a couple of rules I teach people. One, thoughts cause feelings, not events. So it's really think about an event that causes how you feel, not the event itself.
Slow down for a minute for me and repeat that again, because I really want my listening audience to get this. This show is a show that can change your life.
Yeah, the formula is event plus thoughts equals feelings. That's the biggest part of it. There's another part to it with behavior. And one of the rules I teach is that thoughts cause feelings, not events. So it's what you think about things that really causes how you feel, not the event or what happens.
Now, give me an example on that. Give me an example about that.
Sometimes when I talk to my daughter, here's a good example. One time I was feeling kind of lazy. My wife was out of town and I knew she wanted some pizza. Well, I thought, I don't really feel like going, and I feel kind of lazy. I don't feel like going to pick up pizza. So I said, honey, do you still want to have pizza? And she said, oh, you think I'm fat. And then she got all angry at me and never talked to me the rest of the weekend. Well, I was trying to be lazy and not have to go, but it was her thoughts about the meaning she attached to what I was saying that really caused her to get angry needlessly, because I really wasn't saying that at all. I just wanted to know if I could relax or have to get up and get clothes on and go out in the winter to get some pizzas. That's a classic example of that.
Exactly. That's an example of someone taking an event and intuiting it in their mind, which produces their thinking about the event, which is not necessarily. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this is not a new idea. There's a Greek philosopher called Epictetus, and he. Over 2,000 years ago, he said, man is disturbed not so much by the events of his life as he is by the beliefs he holds about them. And then decades or centuries later, Shakespeare said, things are neither good or bad, but thinking makes them so.
Yes. Our thinking makes
them so. Those are two really simple quotes. Yeah. This is all the formula I use is event plus thoughts equals feelings. Is based on Albert Ellis's ABC theory of emotions. And his formula is based on, when we were in high school, we learned that algebraic formula, A plus B equals C.
Yes. Yeah, I can't forget.
A is a constant, B is a variable. And if A stays the same and you change B, C changes. Well, in Ellis's formula, the A stands for activating event, something that happens. Okay, and they can be real or imagined. And then the B stands for the beliefs you have about the activating event or yourself, others in life. And then the C stands for what you feel and what you might do as a consequence of what you, so C stands for consequence. So it's what you feel and do as a consequence of what you believe about the activating event. Now it's just kind of like that, and so it's really like that A plus B equals C that we all learn in school. It's the same thing. And the whole point is, if you change your beliefs about the event or about yourself, others, and life, it ends up changing the way you feel.
And that sounds so very simple. And yes, this is not a new thought. You know, there, I don't believe there's really much new in the world. It's just a recycling of thoughts and ideas and consciousness. However, going back to your example of your daughter and the pizza, had you not been feeling like fatigued, as you said, a little lazy, and, you know, got up and went to get the pizza, she would have interpreted that event differently, because Dad went to get the pizza. He brought it home. Yeah. So therefore, yeah, there wouldn't have been that thinking about what she put into it. Her, you did your A, which is, okay, I'm responsible for the pizza. B, she's responsible for her thinking about it. Whether you went out of the door and got in your car to get the pizza, or if you ordered it in. Ordering it in to her says, ah, well, possibly he doesn't care enough about me. He feels like I'm too fat. And what does she do? What does she do with her feeling? The consequence is that she gave you was, she didn't talk to you for, you know, a couple of few hours there.
Yeah.
Which, and your intention, you know, was like completely off the mark from where she was was going with that. And that happens all the time in our world. We take an event and we make it into this catastrophic thing that's going to just, you know, I hear people in my practice say, you know, when something awful happens, you know, this is just going to kill me. I'm going to die from this. And I'm like, please stop saying that, because you will. If you keep believing that an event can make you, break you, take you throughout your life, and you stay stuck in that place, if that activating event, so to speak, causes you to do that, you will stay stuck. But we have a choice of what we want to think, which will define what our consequence or the outcome will be.
See, I actually have identified what I call cognitive choice. One of them is how you look at things. And there's always more than one way to look at anything. Another one is what meaning you attach to things. Well, there's always more than one thing that something could mean. You know, my daughter thought it meant that I thought she was fat because I didn't want to go get the pizza. The other one is what you remember. Any given point in time, I can remember some things right now to bring tears to my eyes and other things that make me laugh. And then what you focus on is another choice. Yeah, you could focus on, I look in the mirror at 67. There's a lot of things I could focus on that are really depressing, and other things that, you know, might make me feel pretty good for a 67-year-old guy. What you imagine will happen in the future, that's another choice you always have. A sixth choice is what you expect of yourself, others, in life. Another choice is what you compare things to. I mean, I can compare myself to some people and feel really poor, and compare myself to other people and feel really rich. And then the last one is how much importance you attach to anything that does happen. So you've got how you look at things, what meaning you attach, what you remember, what you imagine, what you focus on, what you compare things to, what you expect of yourself, others, and life, and how much importance you attach to anything that does happen. And see, there's always more than one way to make those choices. Some of the ways we might make them will make us feel better. Others will make us feel worse. Some ways we might make those choices will make it easier to deal with things. Other ways would make it harder. And we always have a choice. And it's a choice that nobody else can make for us. Only we can. Now, those choices are made somewhere deep in our brain physiology. Not even a neurosurgeon can figure out where to go and somehow gain control over those choices. We're the only ones that have control over those choices.
Right. And many people do not believe that they have that much control over themselves, but they do. And I find, especially when working with individuals in their mental and emotional health, that their emotions get trapped in an event. and everything after that in their life, that event may have happened when they were 4 or 5, but it cast a shadow on how they begin to look at things at age 19 and 20. Also, the meaning about what happens to them. They choose relationships, jobs, careers, based on the meaning that they attach to that event that happened so long ago that they forgot what the event was. But that emotional code, that emotional stuff stays in our subconscious and stuck there until we wake up and we pay attention and we stop comparing ourselves to others. Because when we compare, it only brings on shame. Comparing brings us straight to shame. Yeah. And lastly, go right ahead.
I was just going to say, you and I talked earlier on the phone, and we talked about ruts. You know, many years ago, a neuroscientist came to our school and talked to us about, and she used the word ruts, and it made so much sense to me because I spend a lot of time driving on dirt roads out in Utah, and I know what it's like. Your tires slip into these ruts, and it's really hard to stay out of them and really hard to get out of them. And that's what happens in your brain, too. If you keep having the same thought, same feeling, or behaving the same way, saying and doing the same thing, you create literally ruts in your brain, well-worn pathways. And those ruts make your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions automatic. And it's easy to slip into those ruts, just like it is real ruts on dirt roads, and it's just as hard to get out of them or stay out of them. And what that does is it makes your thoughts, feelings, and actions automatic. And because they become so automatic, you start losing sight of the fact that you have choice. Choice is how you want to look at things. Choice is how you want to feel. Choice is what you want to say or do. And it just starts, everything becomes so automatic that you just don't think you have a choice anymore.
I so agree with you on that. And that leads us to one of your points about, you know, what we imagine will happen next. When we are in that rut, there's no imagination. We just feel stuck, like helpless, like a victim. It is only when we begin to imagine, take control, decide that we do have a choice, that we can do something about getting that car unstuck, our life unstuck from out of the muck and the mire and come up.
Yeah, actually, one of the things I urge people to do is take and make what we call a coping card, take a little index card and write these 8 choices down on those cards, you know, how you look at things, what meaning, just write the words look at, meaning, remember, imagine, focus on, compare, expect, and importance. And then practice always saying, it's my choice how I look at things. It's my choice what meaning I attach. It's my choice what I want to focus on. It's my choice what I want to expect. It's my choice how much important. And just practice doing that on a regular basis. Pretty soon that becomes automatic. So rather than go down these ruts, get stuck in these ruts, you're actually getting yourself out of that rut by saying, whoa, wait a minute, it's my choice. And ultimately, because all those things are true and that determines how I feel, then technically and logically, it's my choice how I want to feel because of that.
You are so right about that. And listening audience, don't worry a bit. Dr. Bev has got your back. I will make sure that we put that up again on the show page so that you can see it and you can read it and you can make that index card for yourself. You can begin changing your life today. Today, you can begin changing your life by what you look at, how you look at it, what it means to you, how you focus on it, what you expect, and what you can imagine that will happen next. And really using your imagination and attaching the importance to the here and now, staying in the present and not in that past emotional moment that kept you stuck in a rut.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Ray, thank you again for being my guest today. Before we went to break, we were talking about Dr. Ellis, who created the ABC theory of emotions. Talk to me about that.
There's a saying I had on a poster in my room. It said, genius is looking at what everyone else has looked at and seeing what no one else has seen. Well, that's pretty much what Ellis did. I mean, things happen the way they happen. I mean, it's just the way life is. I always say that the formula for the way life unfolds is one I talked about in the beginning of the program, event plus thoughts. You know, something happens. It can be real or it can be imagined in our mind. And then we generate thoughts about that. That's what your brain's constantly doing, trying to make sense out of things. And then those thoughts sometimes will cause feeling or emotion. Emotion is really designed to be energy to move, to help us do something, to help us get what we want and possibly what we need, and to deal with threats. And then that emotion, our behavior will tend to follow our emotions toward our life events. And our attitudes are always the father of our behavior. So Ellis just came up with a simple formula for emotions called the ABC theory of emotions, where A is the activating event, B is the beliefs you have about the event and what's happening, or yourself, others in life, those can come into play too. And then C is your consequence, or what you feel and do as a consequence of what you believe about the activating event, yourself, others, and life. And that's the ABC theory of emotions. And he came up with that back in the 1950s. And he was considered, since then, he's been considered the father of modern cognitive behavioral therapy.
And that is so true. And what I hear in my practice from clients that they've been told by others, and that activating event, like I said, may have happened in their childhood, their teenage years or adult years. It really doesn't matter. But somewhere along the way, someone told them, you shouldn't feel the way you do. It's your fault you feel the way you do. There's something wrong with you feeling that way. You're making a big deal out of nothing. It's okay, those people said and did what they did. So what? Let it be.
Yeah, there's two balance. There's kind of a balancing act you have to do here. I always use this example. If I went up to my dad when my mom was in a coffin at a funeral, if I went up to him at that moment, I want to go up to him and I want to say, Dad, whatever you're thinking right now and feeling right now is perfectly understandable and part of being human, given what your life experience with mom has been. So just let it be. But if 6 months later, my brother calls me and says, Dad's getting really depressed, and I'm afraid we're going to lose him too, the way he's going, because he's not eating, he's smoking and drinking again. Well, then I'm going to have to talk to him about how he's choosing to look at things. You know, I'm going to have to say, Dad, you got some choices to make here, you know, and if you make them the way you are right now, I understand that, because I might make them the same way if I going through what you're going through. But the point is, if you keep making them this way, it's probably we're going to lose you too. And I would hope that he would learn to choose to look at things differently and make some different choices so that we can have him stay around as long as possible. So you have, I always think of a doctor's scale where the nurse shifts this weight from side to side, left and right, trying to strike a balance. Well, the trick is trying to strike a balance between these two somewhat opposing points of view. One is that anything we think, feel, say, or do is understandable and part of being human, given what our life experiences have been. And the other side of it is it's our choice how we want to look at things. It's our choice how we want to feel, and it's our choice what we want to say and do. So there's kind of a balancing act you have to do there. And sometimes it tends to make sense to go with one point of view. And sometimes it makes more sense. Because the only way you're going to move forward is to go with it's your choice. Because choice is power. The fact that I can choose how to look at things and that can determine how I feel and what I ultimately end up saying and doing, that's real power. That's the power I have. That's the real only power I really have.
You know, that is so important. I recently had a new client that came into the office, and one of the things she said that struck me was that she had been dealing with depression. She had had someone die, commit suicide, and they died. And she had been going through sadness, fatigue, just a general feeling of just I'm moving, but I feel like I'm moving in quicksand. And she says, I know that I'm better than this. I know that I can do better than this. I've done that in the past. She said, I talked it over with a friend, and they suggested that perhaps this is something a little bigger than me, and maybe I should seek a professional. And she said she gave it a lot of thought, and she called several therapists before she got to me and felt comfortable enough to come into the office and let's talk about the choices that she does have, the choices that she can make for herself.
Yeah, one of the things Dr. Ellis always talked about was it's very important that people start to talk about the way their feelings come about in semantically or scientifically correct and precise ways. For example, here's some common ways people talk. He makes me so angry. You really tick me off. That makes me feel guilty. That's so embarrassing. That's so depressing. You hurt my feelings. My job is stressing me out. These kids are driving me crazy. He makes me so happy. This class is boring, which is something I used to hear all the time. All those things are scientifically incorrect. That's not the way things really happen.
Because,
And so more correct things would be, for example, no one upsets me. I upset myself. I make myself angry. I make myself feel guilty, or I'm stressing myself out in this job, or I drive myself crazy when the kids do those things. I drive myself crazy. It's not them. I do it to myself. No one can make me happy, and I can't make others happy. And teachers don't bore students. They bore themselves. And one of the ones I really think is important nowadays is this whole idea of hurting feelings. And the reason is because of bullying has become such a big problem in schools. And one of the messages they keep sending kids, when you and I were kids, we're almost the same age. When you and I were kids, they used to tell us sticks and stones will break our bones, but names will never hurt you. Well, that's true. It's really what you think about what people are saying that determines whether you feel hurt or not. And now we're telling kids that words hurt. Well, that's just not scientifically true. And we're really making kids into victims. And I always say to people, let's talk about feelings. Okay, have you ever seen a feeling? Well, obviously not, because it's something that happens inside your body. You see what people look like when you have a feeling, but you never see a feeling. Have you ever held a feeling in your hands? Well, no, of course not, because it's some biochemical event, electrical event in your body. And my point is, if you can't see feelings and you can't hold them in your hand, then how do you hurt feelings? And the answer is you don't. That's not the way it works. That's an unscientific way to express what's happening. What's really happening is sometimes, because of what we as human beings understandably choose to think about other people in our lives and what they say or do to us, we make ourselves feel hurt. And that's not bad news, that's good news, because that means we can choose to look at things in a way where we won't feel hurt or not as much as we did before.
That's pretty big. That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
If people get nothing else from the show, get that.
One of the programs I've kind of a spin-off of the Mental and Emotional Toolkit is I developed a program called Mental and Emotional Karate. And basically it's based on that, just that, it's what I call an inside-out approach to bullying. Most schools do what they call an outside-in approach. They basically try to stop the bullying to protect kids. And then in the meantime, they're teaching kids really to be victims by saying you can hurt somebody's feelings. And then people walk around thinking my feelings have been hurt. And the other thing is the people who are doing the bullying think what they're telling them that what they're doing is working. What I try to do is an inside out approach. I try to toughen up the kids who are being bullied. I try to harden the targets by teaching them that, no, they don't get to, decide how you're going to feel about yourself. That's something you can learn to choose to decide for yourself, and try to teach them how to do that. And a big part of that is teaching them to have an internal locus of control. And we use two quotes I use from that in that program. One is from Dr. Viktor Frankl. I don't know if you're ever familiar with him. He was a Holocaust survivor. And one of the things he famously said was, everything can be taken from us, but the last of human freedoms. To choose one's own attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. I mean, that's such a profound comment.
Yes.
And the other one is from Eleanor Roosevelt. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead, because Eleanor Roosevelt is one of my favorite, and I love many of her quotes. Go right ahead.
Yeah, and one of the things she said, I always use in this quote too, is that no one can make you feel bad about yourself without your consent, or I've seen it, sometimes it says permission. The point is that something, and when I teach this program to kids, ultimately, you know, when we were kids, they used to teach us, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue. What you say bounces off me and sticks to you. Well, the adult version of that. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's pretty funny because I can remember saying that as a kid, you know, in middle school, you know, it bounces off of me. It's rubber. It's glue. It bounces off of me and it bounces back to you. I'm going to be the one to decide how I feel about this. And again, as you mentioned earlier, you know, thoughts are not feelings. Feelings, as you said, we can't hold them in our hand. We can't touch them. It's something that is that inner locus of control that we have that we can use to decide, okay, is this really the truth? In terms of bullying, I wanted to go back to that for a minute because that's a huge topic. Yeah, everybody is into, I'm being bullied. Okay, well, hold on, wait a minute. What happened? Well, Sally said that I looked really ugly because I have on a blue dress today. Okay, so Sally said your dress looked really ugly and you believe her. So if you believe her, you now believe your feelings are hurt and that you are a victim. And Sally has power over you. No, not true at all.
And that's one of the strategies. I use this with little kids. I remember using it with one of my daughter's friends. She was saying somebody said something. I said, well, is that a fact or an opinion? Well, that's their opinion. I said, are they entitled to their opinion? Well, yeah. I said, are you entitled to your own opinion? Well, yeah. I said, does your opinion have to agree with theirs? Well, no. I said, so whose opinion do you want to go with? I mean, really, because, you know, somebody says you're ugly. Well, that's an opinion. That's not a fact. But, you know, if you repeat something to yourself over and over again, that's one of the things that happens with kids when they sometimes take their life after being bullied, is they repeat things over and over again to themselves without letting anybody know they're doing it. And when you do that, those thoughts start to become rutted in your brain. They start to become automatic. And then simple opinions about things start to feel like facts. So if you're telling yourself, I can't stand this, I can't take this anymore, well, that's just an opinion because you can. You're not going to die. It's, you know, if you were an 80-year-old man with terminal cancer, that's one thing, but you're not. You're a young kid, perfectly healthy, and you've got some people saying things to you you don't like. So you can't stand it. You just don't like it. But when they repeat it to themselves over and over again, that starts to feel like a fact to them. I literally cannot take this anymore. And that starts to become what I call the irrational logic of somebody perhaps taking their own life. Because, you know, it starts to make sense to them that I need to end this because I just can't take this anymore. I can't go on like this. Well, those are all opinions, but they feel like facts. Okay. One of the things I like to teach kids, a little like a couple sentences put together. This is imagine if we could get kids to think this have this become so automatic that every time somebody said to them, they thought this. Here's the way it goes. You can think, feel, say, and do whatever you want to about me. That's your choice. But it's my choice how I look at myself and feel about myself. And you don't get to make those choices for me unless I let you, and I choose not to. That's like the adult version of, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue. What you say bounces off me and sticks to you. That's the adult version of it. You can think, feel, say, or do whatever you want to about me because they can. They can say whatever they want to. That's their choice. But see, it's my choice how I look at myself and feel about myself. And you don't get to make that choice for me unless I let you, and I choose not to. And that's what I want to teach kids in this program is to not let people make those choices for you, to learn to make them for yourself.
And that translates into adulthood, because if we just imagine if we could teach this to children in kindergarten, if we could teach them this in preschool, that they have choices. They are in control of their lives. They don't have to be stuck in what other people think, say, or process about them. What I find is that we don't learn that in school. We don't get it. It's sort of like on the job training. It's, you know, on the life training. It's kind of rough. And as adults, we get there in those thoughts, those limiting thoughts, those things that are not true, those things that are unrational become our truth and the way we see things. And we wonder then why we get into relationship after relationship, be it with a significant other, or maybe it's about employment. It could be any of those things, but we'll keep going around and around and around in a circle until we decide, hey, I've got a choice to change this.
See, that's one of my big issues as a teacher. Like I told you, I first learned this when I was almost 40 years old after suffering so much with more emotion than I wanted to have. And I was a psych major in college. And here I am almost 40 years old and somebody finally tells me, hey, wait a minute, it's your choice how you want to feel. I think that is so negligent of us that we allow kids to go through their entire life. We have them in classrooms for 12 years, elementary, middle school, and high school, and then maybe another four or more in college. And we don't bother to correct one of the biggest lies of their life, that they walk around thinking that people make me feel bad. And we don't bother to, we teach them to be scientific in every other way, to know the truth about things, the way life really works, which we spend hours and years teaching them how science, you know, to explain how life works and to use that to their advantage. And here we let them go through their entire life and never let them know the truth about where their feelings come from. That makes no sense to me. I mean, that's why my mission is to try to get every teacher taught this for their own sake.
I'm with you hands down. I'm with you hands down on that, that if we could teach the teachers this, who may not have learned it themselves by the time they have become teachers, if we can teach them, what a different world, what a different society we will have.
Yeah, because, you know, when you, if you're sitting, like I've been a teacher for 33 years, when you're sitting in a school or a lounge or something like that, talking to, they're not sitting there saying, I'm driving myself crazy today. They're saying these kids are driving me crazy. Well, by looking at it that way, that puts them at the mercy of kids, which is not good for the kids or them. And it also causes them to miss all kinds of opportunities to feel less stressed out and get less angry and everything else with kids. Because once they start getting angry with kids, they start to react or overreact and make a lot of mistakes. And it just snowballs downhill from there. So teach it to teachers for their own sake. Then have them go in that classroom and teach it to kids. Because think about all the things that go wrong in classrooms is because some kid is generating more emotion than is necessary or helpful, either in response to what's happening right at the moment or to something that's happening, some life events in their past or outside the classroom. So if you can teach them to better manage what goes on inside their own head, that's going to make a teacher's job so much easier and so much more rewarding, because kids will forget most subject matter you teach them. But if you teach a kid how to feel better, how to have control over his emotional destiny or her emotional destiny, that's something they'll remember you forever for. They'll never forget that. You'll have taught them to fish so they can eat for a lifetime.
They can eat for a lifetime. And on that, I'm going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
What I like to do is we have this formula, event plus thoughts equals feelings, and that drives your behavior. So what I like to do is draw a circle for people and split it in half vertically. And on the top half, write you, and on the bottom half, write them. And then I write clockwise around that circle. On the top, I write event, think, feel, do. And on the bottom, I write event, think, feel, do, or I use behavior sometimes. And the whole point is this: whatever somebody else says to me is just, or to me is just an event for me. I generate thoughts about that. Maybe I'll generate some feeling, and then I'll say or do something. Well, that becomes an event for them, which they generate thoughts about, have feelings about, and then maybe say or do something back. And that's how conflicts get going. So I call it a circle of conflict. So you go around the circle, and pretty soon you got World War III. Well, the whole point is I draw that picture and show it to kids. I used to draw it on a chalkboard. And I would ask them, look at that picture and tell me, which half of that circle do you have control over? And I've never had a kid get it wrong by doing that. They always say, well, your half. And I said, which half do most people spend most of the time trying to control? Well, it's the other half. And that's why it doesn't work. Because whenever you try to control somebody else and what they think, feel, say, or do, it just invites them to rebel and resist and do the opposite sometimes, even if it makes no sense. So the more you try to control what other people think, feel, say, or do, the more out of control your life's going to feel. The more you try to focus on and control what you think, feel, say, and do, the more in control you can feel over your life. So that's kind of part two of developing an internal locus of control.
And that internal locus of control is so important. It sounds like real big words, but it's really very simple. Yeah. It is you taking control inwardly, intrinsically, about yourself, your belief in yourself, and giving yourself the power to do and feel you're happy, to be there for you in the present moment, no matter what else is going on around you. And again, that's a very hard thing to do for, especially like you said, you were 40 years old before, you know, you got it. Someone told it to you. Like, imagine, as you said, how much time, pain, and suffering that could have saved you. And that is exactly what this program is about: saving people time, pain, and emotional suffering. That you are in control. And when you feel as if, and again, you're a teacher, I'm a psychotherapist, I look at it as if we're one and the same. We're both servants trying to save others time, pain, and emotional suffering in the best way that we know how. And you created a method of giving the children in your classroom choices, and you gave them a thought process as to how to look at things. And adults, what Ray was teaching his children in his classes, this is for you too, in the here and now.
Because the best thing an adult could do or a parent could do for their kids is to develop an internal locus of control and some of the other tools that are in the toolkit, but that one in particular, and pass that on to your kids. Let them hear you talking about things the way they really are in life. That, no, people don't upset me. I upset myself sometimes, and that's okay because that's part of being a human being, but it's my choice how I want to feel. Just imagine how much misery you'll spare your kid if you were to talk like that and teach them why that's true and show them why that's true and help them see that you always have a choice. Other people can, they get to choose how they want to look at things and look at you, but you get to choose how you want to look at yourself, and nobody can make that choice for you unless you let them. I mean, that is so powerful. I mean, that's the best thing, best gift you could give your daughter or son.
Yes, it's self-esteem.
You know, one of the things you mentioned, you're a therapist and I'm an educator, and one of the things Albert Ellis used to say, one of his famous quotes was, therapy should be educational and education can be very therapeutic. And like you said, they really are the same thing. And that's one thing about REBT. It is a very educational form of therapy. So really, I can do it as education in a classroom. And kids could take that and use it in their life just like they use anything else, and it'd be very therapeutic. That's one of the beauties of it. You know, the thing people always worry about and why so most people have never done these kind of things is because people think, well, we can't have you doing therapy in a classroom. Well, you don't want to do therapy in a classroom. I don't want to hear somebody's life details and intimate stories and stuff. That's not the place for that. That's one-on-one kind of thing. But this is education. And I really believe if you give people the right tools, they'll do a lot to help themselves. And when I was a kid, work construction, the old guys used to always tell me, kid, if you use the right tool, any job is easy. Well, if you, that's true with dealing with your own emotions and fixing whatever might be broken, quote unquote, in your mind, is if you use the right tool, you can fix just about anything. And there's only so many tools out there. And one of them is to develop an internal locus of control. And if you can learn that, that will just save you so much to realize that it really is my choice how I want to feel, because it's my choice how I want to look at things. If you can learn that and then just ingrain that in your tissues, that it becomes your automatic response to life, that will save you so much misery and pain and suffering that just most people do. And it's just all needless, really.
Yes. And again, I know that people say, you know, that's easier said than done. I'm not going to agree with that.
Well, it's like anything else.
It's easy. It's like everything easy else to say. Yeah. But when we practice it over and over and over again, it becomes very easy to do.
I always think about people who learn lines to a play. Think about people who learn how to play a musical instrument and can do songs from memory, and people who practice sports and how much practice and everything, how automatic it becomes for them to do all those different types of physical skills. It just takes practice. It's like anything else. You have to create these ruts in your brain. And one of the things you have to, you and I've talked about this before, there's a couple of rules when it comes to ruts. One is, once you make ruts in your brain, you can't get rid of them. So we've got some crummy ruts for thinking some ways that make our lives worse, feeling some ways that make our life worse, saying and do things that make our life worse. Unfortunately, you can't ever get rid of those. The only thing you can do is create some new ones. Just like the city, it's like a city creating new streets for you to take that'll get you to where you want to go easier and better with less traffic and less inconvenience. Well, it's the same thing. You can do that in your own brain, but you can't get rid of those old ruts. And you'll slip into the old ruts sometimes, but the more you practice new ways of thinking or looking at things and feeling and saying and doing things differently, the better off you're going to be.
The better off you are going to be. And that really understanding and practicing what we do and what we don't control. Is it a big thing or is it a little thing? Is this something I should give a you know what about, or is it something that I don't want to give that much about it? We have that choice to decide. Our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, that's that ABC method. A plus B equals C. We can change our consequences.
I'd like to tell you a third part about developing an internal locus of control. And I think just, I found as a teacher, especially when I taught sex education, I was a health education teacher, and part of that is sex education. It was very important too to teach this to young girls. And that's to not take unnecessary responsibility for how other people make themselves feel. We're each responsible for what we say and do, but not necessarily for how other people make themselves feel about it. Because other people can, you know, we've all had this happen. You say some little thing and somebody really, like my daughter, got really upset with me about stuff. You know, they can make themselves feel as bad as they want to. And that's really not something you're doing to them. That's something they're doing to themselves. Because for them, it's the same formula. Whatever we say or do to them is just an event. And they have all those same choices we do. And we have no control over how they make those choices and how and feeling because of it any more than they have control over how we make those choices. And ultimately, we can learn to choose to make those choices the way we want to and feel better. And they can choose to make them in a way that makes them feel a lot worse than they need to. That's not something we do to them. Now, the goal is not to make somebody into a sociopath where we walk around not caring about how other people feel.
Of course.
And to, Yeah, and it's kind of like, I always think of the, remember the Three Bears and Goldilocks story?
Yes.
Where the one porridge was too hot and the one porridge was too cold and then the other one was just right. Well, if I sit there and say, I don't care how people feel, that's too cold. If I sit there and say, it's my fault they feel bad, that's too hot. And somewhere in the middle is to take this position. The way they feel is, and look at things, and the way they feel is understandable and part of being human. But it's their choice how they want to feel. That's kind of somewhere in between the hot and cold. So,
and that
because the truth is, just like no one else says, yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go right ahead.
Oh, and you know, one of the things I said earlier, there's a statement. First time I ever heard this, I was reading an article about what they do with cardiac rehab patients because I was a paramedic for part of my life there while I was a teacher. And they talk about, they teach them a phrase, no one upsets you, you upset yourself. And the reason is very simple, because if you get upset and start throwing arrhythmias and you have a heart attack and code and you drop dead, that's nobody's problem but your own. I mean, yeah, people will be sad that you're gone, but you did that to yourself. So they teach them, no one upsets you, you upset yourself. Well, that's true too, that no one upsets other people, they upset themselves. And there are some people, and very often I would say this, more generally, women probably need to hear this more than men, that you're not responsible for how some guy makes himself feel. He's doing that to himself. You know, and a lot of times young girls, for example, get taken advantage of because they think, well, I made him feel bad. No, you didn't make him feel bad. He made himself feel bad. That's his choice. That's not something you do to him. That's something he does to himself. So stop worrying about what you have to do to make it up to him. That's not your job. It's not your job to make him feel good. It's his. You can't make him happy. Only he can do that. Those are really important issues to be talking with kids about, because so many people make mistakes in relationships and things like that because they have all these erroneous beliefs about how things work, that they make me happy and I make them happy. It's my job to make them. Well, you can't do that. It's not the way it works. No more than you can make them angry. They make themselves angry. It's very important people learn to get these things right and see how scientifically how the world really works and how life really unfolds. You know, you have an event, people have thoughts about that. That determines their feeling, not the event.
And not the event. And Ray, I appreciate your talking about how you've taught your students, and I'm sure many of them are grateful for it and are at this point, very prestigious individuals, and they've continued to take that lesson on and to teach it to others, but more so imbibe it in their life, in their emotions, and make choices from that. You know, it's interesting to me that in relationships, and especially in our culture, in this day and age, it's I hear this so often, especially from women, not so much from men, but from women. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Hold up. Wait a minute. You just walked into Dr. Bev's office and you're telling me, okay, you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So if that is the case, because you can't really hurt someone's feelings, they decide whether their feelings are hurt and what feelings those are. You do not have responsibility for that. Our society has taught women to be the nice girls, be a good girl, you know, be seen, not heard, which is hurtful. It's hurtful to them in the long run, and especially in their relationships. And men, on the other hand, are taught to be that bully example that we talked about earlier, that they do have the power to hurt your feelings. They are in control. You have no control about what is done or said to you or what happens to you. And that is also a falsehood. The guy is saying, I can't hurt your feelings. The woman is saying, well, you know, I just don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Really?
See, one of the things I used to always say to young girls is, if he's taking care of him and you're taking care of him, who's taking care of you? And that's part of it. And the other thing, you know, we've got all these news reports lately about, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault. Well, one of the really underlying parts of it, a locus of control plays into that too, because guys do a lot of what they do to women because they really truly believe that a woman turns them on. Well, that's not true. That's not the way it works. It's what you think about a woman and her appearance and what you imagine is going to happen or might happen. And what you practice imagining in your own private time, perhaps because you look at pornography or something, or you listen and talk to other guys and joke about it. It's what you think about, you know, the appearance of a woman or her presence that causes you to get turned on or causes your sexual arousal, just like what you think causes any other feeling. And for guys to tell, you know, like, well, she turns me on. No, that's not the way it works. You turn yourself on. And that's okay. That's part of being human. But don't go blaming them for it, because then it allows you to justify some behavior that's just not acceptable and not healthy for you or women.
That is so powerful, Ray. I'm going to end on that note. And folks, please read his book. It, you can find it on Goodreads. And Ray, the title of the book is It's Just an Event. It's your choice how you want to feel. The ABC system of cognitive, emotional, and behavioral self-management and self-improvement. Ray Matthews, thank you so much. And I look forward to having you on my show again.